In how NRI grooms, duped, cheated, humiliated and harassed for various purposes. They are ruthlessly exploited for immigration purposes. They are blackmailed and extorted for money. They and their families are put behind bars. They lose their jobs, their social status, their visas, and in some cases, even their lives. We will be covering some horrifying cases to show to you the extent of the destruction that has been caused to NRI grooms for one single mistake. The mistake of marrying a person from India. So let me first start by showing how NRI grooms are callously exploited for immigration purposes. Most of these hapless grooms have no idea that they are being used for immigration until their wives land on foreign shows and then they suddenly disappear or clearly say that they just married for a visa. But even the grooms who come to know that they are being used for immigration beforehand suffer disastrous consequences. Consider the case of Raghu Modi from Toronto, Canada. He is an engineer from Delhi College of Engineering and works for a multinational firm in cellular communications. Raghu, would you like to elaborate on your case?
Yes, I'm a Canadian citizen and my parents live in India. My father is a retired general from the Indian Army and he's fought through war for our country. I married a girl in India in 2002 and quite soon after the marriage we found that she was having an adulterous relationship with a guy who actually came to my wedding and was basically one of her co-workers in the company that she worked at. When we confronted the girl, she went back, she denied everything and went back to her parents' place. And her father threatened that we were just trying to malign the reputation of his daughter. And soon after, when we caught her red-handed with conclusive proof, which can be proved beyond reasonable doubt, just by the 498A case for my parents and me, I was not able to go to India because I was receiving death threats both in Canada and in India. And eventually, long story short, we had to pay out just to get out of this. And the thing that pleased me the most is that a sitting Delhi High Court judge actually threatened my father that either I will pay up or he would send my father to prison. Now, this is after my father fought two wars for this country. And that is how we treat our own soldiers and our so-called, you know, heroes of our country. But, you know, that's what we are born into, so we have to fight them and pay up just to gain our own freedom.
Right, so as Raghu's case proves that once NRI is married, he's a sitting duck. So in Raghu's case, the wife had demanded rupees 26 lakhs to settle the case and he ended up paying 7 lakhs, so no reason at all. So some fraudsters actually wait for longer periods of time just to secure their immigration benefits and then pounce. So let's look at the case of Mr. Gill from Sydney, Australia, whose wife actually filed false cases against him 1 week after she got her immigration status in Australia. So, Mr. Gill, would you please like to go ahead with your story?
Yeah, hello. My name is Sam.
Could you please speak a little louder? Your voice is a little slow. Hello.
Actually, I'm an engineer at Punjab Engineering College, Chandigarh. I'm working with the Australian government. I was married 6 years ago, and my wife waited to become permanent resident before she could file 498A. Once she became permanent resident, she went to India and filed case in about 3 weeks' time. And now I don't have access to my son. My mother had stroke last week. And it's all because of agony, this harassment. And they are using my old age mother as a blackmail weapon so that I can come to India and they can come to Australia and take over all the assets. And now they are even talking about red corner notice and Interpol and they have few influencing people in their family, judges and lawyers and some from the international court as well, and that's what they are using to stop the bail of my mother. And even in the public they have said that they want to finish our family and we will never see our son again.
So, as you can see in Mr. Gill's case, thank you, Gill. As you can see in Mr. Gill's case, a false case after just 1 week of getting permanent residency. So, how much more obvious can it get? So, there are brides who are very interested in marrying an NRI to get an easy visa. Once they are here, many of them simply vanish. Others try to get their own independent visa, sometimes by taking advantage of foreign laws meant to protect victims of domestic abuse. Within a short time of landing abroad, a false domestic violence case is promptly filed against the husband for getting a work permit or other immigration benefits. So such cases are rampant in Canada, and we have Mr. Parvinder Gill from Canada who can elaborate more on this. He runs his own NGO for victims of fraudulent marriages. So Mr. Gill, would you like to explain more about that? Mr. Parvinder Gill, are you there?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Yeah, could you please tell about your NGO and the victims that you have actually seen in Canada?
There are so many types of victims, and as I mentioned just a few minutes before, that one guy has been expired just 2 weeks before, and his wife came from India, and she was saying that one Baba told her that don't make physical relations with her husband up to 5 years, because she was well prepared. She knew that within 1 month she can get IV. So once she got IVs, she ran away and she charged her husband for assault. And this was the second marriage of that guy. And he was thinking that when my wife would go to the court, and there might be a chances of compromise, but she did not show up in the court. So ultimately his charges were dropped, but he got a severe depression because of this, that he was thinking that my family life would be okay once we got compromised.
Mm-hmm.
So because of depression, he started drinking, and after 4 or 5 days, and that lady now asking other people in Montreal that how I can get his house, how I can get his insurance, and how I can get his property from India.
Right,
so everyone can judge her greed.
Right. That is a really sad story indeed, Mr. Parvinder Gill. We'll actually be talking more about the NGO towards the end of this press conference. So when a false case is actually filed against the NRI husband, it's not just the NRI husband that suffers, it's his entire family. To bring this point, Sonia from Canada, could you please illustrate your case?
Yes, my name is Sonia Dufour. I am a resident of Toronto, Canada. I'm just calling on behalf of my brother, who's actually in India. Yes, it's Sonia Dufour calling from Toronto, Canada. I'm calling on behalf of my brother, who's actually currently in Delhi, Rohini Jail, under false allegations made by his wife. He actually just got married to this girl on July 22nd, and they met through Bharat Matrimony website. And after 4 days, he made the allegations of rape, unnatural sex, dowry, and threat to commit murder on my brother. So at this point, you can see that past 12 days been traumatized for the entire family, not just in Canada, but also in India. Everyone's been running around. Here we were celebrating his wedding to this girl, and little that we knew that, you know, she's going to put him in jail for something that he didn't do. So my brother, you know, he's been residing here for past 5 years or 7 years, and he's got no criminal record whatsoever. He's a very responsible citizen. He's self-employed, and he's an IT professional. So it's not something that he just came across, you know, one day, and he happened to be a victim. It was a pre-planned. This girl has been remarried. Actually, this was her second marriage, and she had actually filed a 498A on her previous husband as well. So the previous husband actually got rid of her by paying 14 lakhs to this girl. And she played the same game again on my brother.
Just necessary start to hear. As you can see, there is a tendency for people who have filed 490 before to file 490 again, and it's not just the NRI groom that suffers, it's the entire family. To illustrate this point, let us go through the case of Indra. Indra, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, please tell your story.
In my case, I'm talking regarding my brother. Got married in 2002. At the same time, I'm not expecting a child any day. So I married my parents with my pregnancy, and his wife in US after a month. Initially when she came, she didn't understand that she wanted to work with Sivan, and when he told her that he could not work here with a developer, she just thought that few things up, trying to make her life miserable and so on. And she started then talking about him, complaining about him. And when his friend told him about it, he asked him all the tales and the red-handed. She went back to India and she had belongings and all. Once she filed 498 against my brother and my parents, and my parents had never even lived with her. My parents had to run from pillar to post to get, you know, bail for them, and all this trauma took its toll, and I lost my father last October. And my mother is again.
It's okay, Indra. I'm really sorry to hear that. So it's okay. We can continue the story later. So as you can see, the impact on the entire family is devastating. Entire families break apart just because of a false case when NRIs marry people from India. So there are quite a few other cases as well. Let's consider one more case to see the impact on the family. Let's see the case of Chirag. Chirag, are you there? Chirag, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, could you please go over your case?
Yeah, so I was married back in 2001. I had a brief marriage of 8 months and it was an arranged marriage. I knew that before this marriage, you know, that my ex-wife was forced into the marriage. And she was actually in love with someone else, and when she, but she had a dream of coming to the United States, and that's why, you know, her family forced her to getting into marriage with me. Our marriage didn't last very long. It was just about 8 months, and she decided to go back, and with a discussion with her family and under the influence of her family's decision, and. After that, just we stayed separated for 8 months, and we still had irreconcilable differences. And after 8 months of separation, they decided to file a 498 against me and my family. They involved my sister, who was not married that time, my father and my brother. And it has been 4 years that the case is still going on. My sister is now married. But, you know, they were pretty influential to get my sister's and my father's passport impounded because they knew that my sister and my father had visas to the U.S. And that way they wanted to keep pressure on our family so that we stay separated. You know, my sister now, who is married, and her husband, so my brother-in-law, who has an opportunity to work in U.K. and has been visiting U.K. on work, they had to stay separated because my sister's passport was impounded. Not only that, just about 6 months ago, you know, my mother suffered a stroke, a paralytic stroke, and I badly want to go see her, but I cannot do that because I know how influential they are and what they can do to my career and my future. They are asking money in terms of tens of lakhs of rupees to settle the case. If I give them the money, they will probably back out and, you know, wash their hands with it. So they also complained about me in the U.S. consulate, and, you know, once I went to one of the U.S. consulates for visas, they actually stopped me at the border and asked me about my previous marriage and what's going on with that marriage and the complaint. So, you know, basically, you know, I'm separated here. My sister cannot join her husband. I can go see my family. My family can visit here because their passports are impounded.
Right. So, thank you, Chirag. So, this is yet another case in which we see the impact on the family because of 498A. Some brides marry NRI for immigration benefits, while some others marry just for money. As we just saw in some cases, the reason for filing a false 498A.
Hi, how are you? Smiling, how are you? Everything okay?
That's
fine. I didn't know that I was supposed to be coming late.
Hello, who's this?
Okay, see you in a minute.
Hello.
Hi, my name is Wagila. How are you?
Hi, Wagila. We're actually in the middle of a conference here, so I'll let you know when I want your case to be heard.
Okay, cool.
So, Wagila has actually joined us from UK. So, to continue the story, so Stembrite, Mary and I is just for money. And there are many such cases like this. We have a case from Middle East, and we also have a case from Australia. But they would be joining us later. So, but money and immigration is not the only fraud that NRIs face while considering marriage to an Indian person. Many times, some women are so desperate to marry an NRI that they misrepresent or hide material facts about themselves. That could be information like age, education, or something else. But generally, the most devastating is the concealment of serious medical conditions from the NRI group. So let's hear more from Aman, who joins us from New Hampshire, USA.
Hi. I've been married for 3 years now, and this was an arranged marriage by the elders. And my wife was diagnosed with a chronic disease of the intestine just 4 months prior to the marriage, and I have the prescription to prove it. And this information was concealed from us at the time of marriage and for a few months after the marriage. She somehow lied about the reason that she is on medication for 4 months, and later she had to reveal it when her condition worsened and we had to go to local doctors. So she stopped reacting to the medicine, and subsequently her condition worsened, and after exactly 11 months after our marriage, she had to return back to India. In India, she went two major surgeries in which her large intestine was removed. And after waiting for 1 year for her to recover, we realized that her condition is, you know, is kind of like a disabled condition. And due to the concealment of the material facts at the time of marriage and her inability to lead a normal life after the surgery, I sent a divorce petition to her in six. And as a response to that one, she filed 498A case exactly 16 months after we started living separately. And that too was filed with as a covert operation with the Hyderabad police, where they did not go through an inquiry phase and directly showed up at my parents' place, and they arrested them on the same day. So after getting the bail, my parents, when they consulted the police, they were not even interested in investigating the claims that were made by my wife. They were only forcing my parents to settle the case by paying off or face the consequences of Interpol, basically red corner notice for me. So when the police did not investigate the exorbitant claims made by my wife, we submitted over 100 pages of evidence in terms of her emergency room visits before the marriage and her prescriptions and all the mails we exchanged, in which it clearly shows the nature of relationship we had. And the police clearly ignored that thing and just copied the content from the FIR into the charge sheet, and they filed it in April 2007. And just last month, I realized that they even went ahead with the Interpol notice against me, and still going on with the case.
All right. Thank you, Aman. So, actually, it's very late on the East Coast. It's already 3 a.m. to tell people in India that how much people are affected. They're actually attending press conference at 3 a.m. in the morning. So, we have a very senior journalist from TV Asia, Ms. Vanna. So, she has also seen some cases at close quarters. And she also had interacted with the ministry, with the minister of the Ministry of Overseas Indian Affairs. So, Vanna, would you like to shed some light on your experiences?
Hi, guys. Here, Vandana from Chicago. Actually, the so-called the new ministry, which is just infant right now, NRIs, basically, which was made for NRIs, but they are working in a different mission altogether. And I'm seeing, because when the cause of the mission is like a gender bias, so it means they are not going to achieve anything, then how can you have anything very clear? I spoke to minister when he was here, and he said that, oh, don't talk to me this thing in public. And my comment to him was, I am public, you are public. Everything has to be on my camera. I don't talk anything behind the camera. There's no relationship that we are sharing here other than that you are a visiting minister for an NRI cause. After that, and before that, even the inception of the ministry, I wrote a letter to them asking about what's happening. Are you going to be listening to both ends, or it's going to be only one-sided story? You may say, me being as a woman, we talk about woman empowerment and stuff like that. I always believe that, but empowerment has to be in a good way. Not you have a president who is a woman, I don't know what will be the fate. You have a the Chief Lady Sonia Gandhi as head, she's a woman, and then you have a pimp like Mr. Renuka Chaudhary, and these are state-sponsored extortion and prostitution, nothing other than that. When the cases can be settled by paying money, what if the government cannot see your so-called Prime Minister, your so-called President, they don't see those things? I don't know anybody of them has daughters or not, they are not worried about that. But I am really very distressed seeing all these things, what's happening. And what will happen in future, these so-called young professionals, those who are coming here to be something in life, because U.S. is known as a land of opportunity. If the government of India will not listen, so we will make the government of India listen through government of U.S. We can have it passed here in the Congress, where the government of India will be begging to the U.S. government. That's what I'm going to say. And this is a very strong comment, if you don't mind saying that. They are really suffering here. But whenever somebody goes and talks, they're being abused. And yeah, so that's what it is. That's all I want to add up.
So did you ever... get a reply from Ministry of Overseas?
No, I have got an acknowledgement from the Bharat Sarkar, so-called, after maybe 12 or 14 months that they have received something. So India is signing the entire, we are going for a 60th Independence Day. If a reply comes from a ministry, which the minister said that I will be looking into it personally after the 12 months of his visit, so you can understand, then you guys are going to get this.
So one thing that Vanna is not mentioned right now is that when she actually posed the question to the minister, she got a standing ovation from the members of the community over there. So thank you, Vanna.
I was the only woman, actually, 104 guys sitting there. And then they all said, then he said, you were the first woman who was telling me the men get abused. I said, what are you talking about? Like, we believe in, especially in U.S., even if when the men can get like orders from the judge, so can the woman. I being a very active journalist, I've been and covered so many times, and the judge has been equally the same way harsh to a fair sex also, if he sees that he's trying to take an undue advantage.
Right, thank you. Thank you very much, Mona. So, coming back to the deception of Indian people as far as unmarried grooms are concerned, we already saw a case wherein the medical condition of the wife was actually hidden before the marriage. And this deception is especially severe when the bride has psychiatric problems. It is often a very time-consuming and costly affair to prove that wife is mentally sick. But the abuse dished out by the bride to the NRI groom can be nerve-wracking. While trying to get their mentally ill wives treated, some NRIs themselves slip into depression and even require professional assistance. The hard part, however, is to deal with the wife's family members who are frequently uncooperative and tend to misguide the girl in such situations. Worse, some people try to make money out of their mentally ill daughter's marriage. Consider the case of Suresh from Texas. Suresh, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here actually.
Yeah, please go ahead.
It was my wife 4 years back, and we were back in the US with the mandate of the marriage. She started showing symptoms like some kind of psychiatric disorder, and for 1.5 years here in the US. And finally the doctor told me to either take her back to India or put her in a mental hospital. I took her back to India and I talked to her father in detail and what happened and everything, then I filed for divorce. And then finally what happened, like they filed for this false identity against me, and after that they filed for interest, and then they filed something in the some other kind of condition and something like that. And finally the matter ended up in like settling up with the money. I got completely her mental breakdown. I had to consult some counselors to get relief with my job and everything basically. I was too much pressure. I believed them so much and they harassed me only for money.
Okay, so as you can see from Suresh's case, money is one of the major factors why some people prefer to marry NRI grooms and then dupe them of their hard-earned money. Now, one particularly interesting case is from Australia. Chetan is the name of the guy, and his wife actually robbed his bank account. So, Chetan, are you there? Chetan, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, could you please go ahead with your story?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, please go ahead with your story.
I'm sorry?
Please go ahead with your story. Okay, the reason I want my most important objective to even say or even see is because I want the anticipatory level for me and my family because I'm sick and tired of this criminal plot.
Okay, we are not very clear, your voice is breaking up a little bit. Are you using a speakerphone? Could you please switch to a handset if you're using a speakerphone?
Are you a visitor?
No, actually, we are not able to hear you.
After my wife.
Yeah, Chetan, are you calling from a landline? If not, then please try calling from a landline. Meanwhile, I'll move on to the next case.
Sorry to interrupt.
Who's that?
Naveen, Florida.
Yes, Naveen, actually your case is next.
Yeah.
So, are you saying something, Anupma?
I'm saying, can we go to the question?
Can we go to the what?
The question of the question.
Alright, there were actually a few more cases which we wanted to cover to show that how, you know, these cases are used and how NRIs actually suffer in child custody issues. So maybe we can cover and also how Interpol red corner notices are issued against NRIs.
Hello, this is Chetan here.
Yeah, Chetan, please hold on a second. So we wanted to cover some of these stories, so I guess we'll just cover three more cases. Would that be okay?
Okay, yeah, I think.
Okay, so Chetan, you can go ahead with your case.
Yes. I was NRI working in software professional in USA before marriage. We were married in Bombay in February of 1999. We got divorced. After marriage, my wife started taking things, cash and jewelry from houses, ranging from few thousand to few lakhs of rupees at different points in time. By the time I would discover it, it would usually be too late. I also now know that she used to forge my signature. In Australia, in March of 2005, she forged my signature to steal $90,000 from our mortgage account. I put an Australian police complaint and 2 years later, in May 2007, she is charged with 3 indictable criminal offences. Because I caught her red-handed, she became extremely abusive and violent while the police were investigating the criminal allegations, and she started to threaten to kill me, my parents, my brother, my son, everybody she could think of, she kept on threatening to kill. She kept on using my son to blackmail and extort money from me. My police complaints are now, she is now charged with 3 criminal allegations, 3 indictable criminal offences. She filed 3 domestic violence complaints against me, and all 3 of them were unauthorized. She never, when we were together in marriage, she never stayed peacefully with my parents, although I used to let her do what she wanted because I didn't want conflict while I was away. Now, and after having trusted that woman for 7 years, my family is completely broken apart. I'm living here, my son is living, I've been separated from my son since last 2 years. My parents are in India, and I'm saddled up with an agency called Child Support Agency, which is the worst public sector organization that I know of. Even local Australian men, they call Child Support Agency as the single biggest reason why Australian men commit suicide.
Right, okay.
I have a complete mental breakdown. I'm constantly having problems at my work. I have lost one job. I've lost it. I'm almost at the verge of losing my next one. I'm having a severe rise in my cholesterol levels, and I just had 2 attacks of chest pain, and I've been hospitalized, and it's just not worth it.
Yeah,
it's not worth it.
So we see your case, Chetan, and it's really an unfortunate situation that you're facing. So as we can see, how these cases impact the health of a particular person when he's undergoing so much stress. So one rather thorny issue in NRI marriages is that of child custody. So often what happens is when there's incompatibility between the spouses, so one of the spouses actually takes the children and flees to India to escape the local laws. So one such case is from Ramesh. Ramesh, could you please go ahead with the case?
I was married in 2001, November. My wife had a pre-existing mental condition that was hidden during the marriage. And after coming to the U.S., you know, I came to realize about her mental condition. She started accusing me of having relationships with my own sisters, with film actresses, the grocery store woman, you know, the accusations became incessant. And after making many professional and personal sacrifices to make sure that she has become normal, you know, what happened was very unfortunate. Well, we eventually had a kid, and we were living happily. We had many enjoyable vacations, and she tried to get her foot firm in the U.S. She could not. And last October, she under the pretext of supporting her ailing father, went to India, and there she filed for child custody. And despite having court orders for child custody on behalf of me, I've not been able to talk to my son. I've not been able to, you know, get in touch with him in any way possible. And when I fought hard on the child custody case in India, we were hit with 498A as well as 506. My 76-year-old father, my wife had never even lived with my parents. My 76-year-old father was taken away without an iota of evidence. The police came, based on her false allegations, took him away to the police station. And we had a hard time trying to get bail. And right now, the investigating officer has filed a charge sheet without even taking our side of the story.
I guess the most heart-wrenching part of this story is that how a father has been separated from the child. Ramesh had actually many recordings that he wanted to play in this particular press conference, but he won't have time for that. And you can see how much attached the kid is to the father, but it is but he's not been able to get in touch. So we'll just take one more case, which is about how NRIs are actually harassed using the Interpol red contact notices, and how they are actually made into international criminals by conniving police officers, and how Interpol notices are issued against them, how their passports are actually impounded, when the case is completely proven to be false. So let us consider the case of Naveen from Florida. Naveen, please go ahead.
This is Naveen from Florida. I got married in 2003 November. Immediately within 2 weeks, I came back to U.S. along with my then wife. She got hit for visa then. So for 5 months and so, we lived happily. Later, we signed up with our fire with her boyfriend before the marriage. And even after the marriage also, she was in contact with that guy in some way, and then with her, with that guy's family as well. So when I came to know this one, so this girl, so she went back to India and then filed the case for 498A and the Dowry cases against me, my parents, and other relatives as well, whom she never lived with actually. I in the case in 2-3 months of mine, since my parents had to be jailed, so I filed for jail. They were in years. She came back to U.S. and continued the divorce case here. But divorce had been issued, and she was denied with whatever she asked for in the court, and she couldn't prove anything in the court. After coming back to U.S. during the procedure, since then she never returned to India and never appeared in any court. So my parents and everyone fought this case for almost 3.5 years. Ultimately, all these charges were dismissed against my parents and other family members. Now all of them are free. My case is still pending. Meanwhile, this is in their influence, whatever they have. So they went to up to Interpol and listed me there on the Interpol website with the red color notice. Initially, the charges were mentioned like the crimes against family. Later, it was changed to crimes against property.
Okay, Naveen, actually your voice is not getting very clear on the other side, so I'll just, you know, just say the basics of your case. So in Naveen's case, as you can see, it was obviously a false case, and the courts have acquitted Naveen's parents. Unfortunately, Naveen cannot go back to India, because the moment he goes back to India, he will potentially be arrested. And the Interpol red contact notice is actually pending against him. So, as you can see, the whole state machinery is used against the NRI groom, just based on a false complaint. So, if you thought that actually filing a 498A was hard, so here's one case which shows how easy it is to file a false 498A case. So, let us consider the case of Dhirendra from New York, USA. Dhirendra is from IIT Kanpur. Dhirendra, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. So, basically, my case, if here in US, she had a green card, she was a permanent resident here. So, as for the law of marriage, after marriage, he went briefly to India for some religious ceremonies, and he came back. So anyway, my wife has started becoming very abusive after we got married. And ultimately, last year I filed for divorce. And after I filed for divorce, like within a month after that, they filed like 498A and domestic violence cases against me, my parents, and my brothers. And she was able to achieve that just by sending one email and a fax to her parents in India. They just filed a complaint on basis of that, and they actually arrested my parents. So the interesting part is, my wife is an NRI. Both of us are here, and they are harassing my parents back in India.
So you are saying that the 498A and the domestic violence case was filed on you without even she going to India, and without that thing happening anyway in India, and it happened in the US?
Yes.
So, in fact, a newspaper report actually compared filing a false 498A case simpler than ordering a pizza. Even for pizza, you have to make a call. In this case, an email was good enough. So, in fact, for filing a false 498A case, the wife doesn't have to be a national of India. So, let's consider the case of Raj K. from New York, USA. Raj is from IIT Madras, and let's see what he has to say.
Yeah, my wife is a British citizen. She actually grew up in the UK. She's been there for about 23 years. And I'm an Indian citizen. We got married in India, but we basically lived in Connecticut after the marriage. We never lived in India as husband and wife. Things didn't work out here. She had an abusive personality, and we broke up shortly, like many other couples. We decided to divorce. And we are going through proceedings right now. And her father, her parents are also British citizens, and they discovered that they could file a false dowry case against me and use that to extort money during the divorce, which is what they're threatening to do now. My father, he was an Indian Army officer. I mean, he spent 30 years in the Army, and these people are threatening to send him to jail purely for money. So this is a pure extortion case, and the question of jurisdiction is important here because we never lived in India. There's no reason for any domestic violence or any dowry case to be filed in India. If she had to file anything, she could do it either here in the US or in the UK. But the laws here are fairly strong, and they require good evidence, and they just can't do anything here. So they're willing to misuse Indian legal system.
Right, so as again, just to emphasize, Raj's wife was not even a citizen of India, she was a British citizen. So as you can see, the harassment is so extreme that a lot of people are actually forced to pay huge amounts of money. We have seen cases where Interpol red corner notices were issued, we have seen cases where passports were confiscated, and a lot of people had to go to jail unnecessarily, and in some cases the families are broken apart. So a lot of people actually just settle the cases to avoid all this harassment. One such person is Pawan from East Coast USA. Pawan, would you like to tell the story?
Yeah, I got married in 2003, and my father-in-law is currently, and at that time also, was a high court judge, and my ex-wife is also, and was also at that time. And certainly I had never heard of or even interacted with the law, even remotely, more than anything that I saw in Hindi movies. But once I got married, we were together for 1 year, in which I was attacked by my wife in many violent ways, including one time when she ran after me with a screwdriver. And due to all these reasons, I certainly had to bring a lot of these things to her father's attention, which he absolutely did not want. And on a scheduled trip to India, where she was supposed to be there for about a month and come back, and I wanted to talk to her father, which she was aware of, she went back to India and completely assassinated my character and everything that she could think of, with absolutely no proof whatsoever. Talked about me to her parents. It took 2 years for me to get a divorce, during which time I was threatened by the judge in all possible ways, through lawyers, through other middle people. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it became a big gang. of two or three lawyers who asked us to pay up as much money as the judge is asking, and not even try to bargain any. In the end, I ended up paying about 18 lakh rupees in cash and about 6 lakh rupees in jewelry. And they are still going around talking within the community without showing any proof of any allegation that they are making. And within those 2 years, certainly my family went through dramatic stress, especially my mother. And the 498A was a specific law that was used to threaten us with. But certainly, him being a judge, he was talking about many of the laws which were beyond our imagination. But bottom line was, we just felt that all the laws that, especially the 498A, did not end up helping any woman, especially my wife, because at the end of the very nearing her divorce, she sent out feelers that she might want to come back, which of course was too late because too much damage was done, and I had already lost trust on my father-in-law, who had threatened my family and certainly had asked for insane amounts of money.
Right. But, so a lot of I'm sorry to interrupt you, Pawan here. So a lot of people actually end up paying a lot of money. Pawan paid 18 lakhs plus 6 lakhs in jewelry. A lot of people paid 25 to 30 lakhs, some even 40 lakhs. So this is a huge extortion racket. There are a lot of cases that you want to present, but we don't have time. So you would actually see a case studies booklet over there, which mentions some of the cases. So you could have a look, after this. So Anupa, do you want to start the Q&A session now?
Yeah.